the fact that their list management has been a debacle since about 5 years ago.
I get sick of people just making things up and just saying stupid things. They were things that were done. They were standby. They were.
What am I making up?
It's not a debacle.
What am I making up?
How is it a debacle when they've played in a grand final, a preliminary final, and won a final?
Too much of a negative. You got to 2018.
Too much of a negative. You just said the place was a debacle.
Well, there it was last night, an AFL classified. Scoot McClure left in a relatively calm mood and ended up punching on with Eddie Maguire. It's got to be said, not for the first time. Just as a referee, Scoot, without knowledge and welcome to you, I would have said a debacle from about 2019 on, fair. Other than that, I thought it was worth a dispute. So welcome to you. It was clearly good TV because the whole footy world's been talking about it since.
Hello, Jared. I think it's a fair and reasonable debate as well. I'm not saying it's all one-sided.
Mm.
If we go back just for context, what I was simply trying to say was that Lordy was making a point about the pressure on Nathan Buckley, which there obviously is.
Yep.
And I simply made the point that whilst there is clearly pressure on Nathan Buckley and his coaching tenure should be under scrutiny,
yes,
there are many things out of his control. And one of those things is list management. Now, I stand by the fact that list management, pre-Ned Guy getting there,
yep,
which was in 2018, wasn't up to scratch. It's led them to kick the can down the road to a certain point where they got to 18, they got within a kick of a flag, they doubled down, as you would, by the way, as you would, as GWS have done.
Including a 7-year deal for...
I wouldn't have given him seven, but it's probably slightly separate.
Okay.
And it's put them
that's list management.
And it's put them in a precarious position.
Mm.
And that has been a debacle. And it has led to them having to trade out Adam Treloar, which they didn't want to do, and led to them having to trade out Tom Phillips,
yep,
which they didn't want to do. They wanted to trade Stevenson so you can get rid of that one.
But, which is silly in my view. I think that is a foolish decision.
Sure.
Because Stevenson had a bad year, but tell me a kid who doesn't have a bad year. Look, I feel like it's been a tough time for Collingwood, but it does appear to me that...
And Eddie was defending his patch, which I respect.
Yes, I understand that, and we'll come back to Eddie, but every time I seem to walk into a studio with a co-host at the present time, they all want to take the baseball bat to Collingwood. Joining us on the line, Tom Morris, who led the charge on Monday night, coming off the long run. It actually took me aback, and I probably, in hindsight, I should have questioned him more on some of the allegations he did make. But he
strong
joins
column
us on the line after going back-to-back with another interesting story about the Cats. But welcome to you, Thomas.
Hello, Jared. Hello, Sam. I do like that debate last night, Sam. I've got to say, I think the Dane Beams deal was part of that debacle as well, so
yes,
I'm on your side.
Thank you.
Yeah, that clearly had debacle written all over it. D for Dane Beams and D for debacle. It turned out to be an absolute shocker. And I'm not sure Bucks was overly keen on doing it, but I'm pretty sure the Pliers helped get that one across the line.
You've got to feel a little bit sorry for everyone in that scenario, Jared. They're all losers there.
Yeah, only big winner there was the Brisbane Lions.
Yes,
Tom,
true.
You were pretty strong also in, well, you weren't pretty strong. You were really strong on Monday night on the couch, opening up a can of worms. I think most people accepted a lot of what you said, but there has been a fair pushback on your allegations the role of Scott Pendlebury as captain.
What's the pushback been?
Well, I've heard pushback that...
Good follow-up.
It was a fairly insulting thing for a long-term captain to be accused of, being A, loyal to his coach, but B, that he's actually a captain that says nothing.
Okay, yeah, no. So just to clarify that, Scott Pendlebury is a Buckley man and has been for a long time. I think he's been on the record as saying that he wanted Buckley to get another contract.
Yep.
I think he played a clip last night, Sam.
Yeah, he said
that. Yep. Confirming that on Footy Classified last night. Pendlebury remains a strong Buckley man and fiercely loyal. That is not the case for other senior players within that group. And that is why I was drawing that distinction. I didn't want people to think that I was saying that Buckley has lost all the players, and that includes the captain, Scott Pendlebury. That's not the case. There is unrest at that football club, like there is at all football clubs that aren't performing well. The difference at Collingwood is that it is at a time when the coach is out of contract and when there is a strong belief among really key players and people within that club that Buckley has regressed to the coach that he was pre-2018, which is not good for him and not good for the footy club. So I was just trying to draw the distinction to make people understand that Scott Pendlebury isn't of that belief.
You weren't prepared, but you did paint the picture of a division between senior players. Is that fair?
No, there's not a division between the players. There is Scott Pendlebury and his loyalty to Buckley, and then other players who aren't as loyal to Buckley. But I don't think that's caused a division between players, as far as I know.
What's your thoughts if you're looking into your crystal ball and what you've clearly heard on the phone after a busy day Monday? What's your feeling about the long-term tenure for Nathan Buckley, or is it still very much up in the air?
I think it's very much up in the air. I mean, Buckley's been on the record with Cal Toomey saying that he might step away himself, and I think that's still the case. But what's happening, I think, is entirely predictable. It was always going to be whether Buckley could absorb losses this year and miss finals. And my belief was that he did it in 2017 and under the guise of the review, which was fair enough. I can't see lightning striking twice if the results continue to go the other way, and that's just the way it's looking at the moment.
Scoop, you've had a couple of tete-a-tetes with the former president of the Collingwood Football Club.
Mm.
How did you leave this particular one?
Did
we break bread afterwards?
Always be honest about this sort of stuff, and I've had moments with Eddie where we haven't spoken for a couple of days. We were talking completely normally by the outbreak. So he knew his position, I knew mine. That's fine.
Did he accept it was of a debacle nature over the last 12 months? I mean, over the summer, that was...
No, I mean, Matthew Lloyd, in the clip after that, if you watch the whole show...
I have read it.
Lloydie went back to him and said, you have to admit, Eddie, the last 12 months have been embarrassing. And he said, no. And he went... And then he started deflecting. And Eddie's an amazing, amazing politician when it comes to deflecting. Don't look here, look over here. He was saying that players leaving clubs left, right and centre, but no one wanted to leave Collingwood. We had to shove them out. I mean, seriously. And then he started blaming Trade Radio. The wheels fell off. Speaking of wheels falling off, that was the terminology that opened up Tom's column on Monday.
Yes.
Which was the wheels are falling off at the Collingwood Football Club, which, Tom, is a pretty strong opening. And I guess I just wanted your sort of 30-second consensus as to why you think they're falling off, because that paints the picture that there's only sort of one end in sight.
Yeah, that's right. I'll give you this 30 seconds I can give you. It is a combination of a variety of factors that are all concluding at the same period of time. It's Buckley's contract. It's the club not performing well. It's the players being frustrated with the coaching. It's the coaches being frustrated with the players not playing well. It's the trade period and the erosion of trust that happened after the trade period has not been repaired, even though the coaches have tried to. The other element that I found really interesting in my dealings on Monday when I was speaking to people in and around the club, who, by the way, were far more willing to speak than anyone at Collingwood has ever been before, I think given the frustration within that football club, is that I was told very confidently that Nathan Buckley's biggest strength in 2018 and 2019 was the way he was able to change the way that he interacted and connected with the players. But it wore thin in the hub, and he was told in no uncertain terms that ship had probably sailed after the trade period. You can't really do what they did in the trade period and then say, no, but we love you again this year. It's okay. We're fine. Mm. Let's be close again. So that connection has been lost, whatever existed in 2018 and 2019. And it's all reached a point where if Collingwood continue to lose games of footy and without one singular president making the call, it could completely blow up. I'm not saying it will, but it's heading along that way.
So it needs a circuit breaker, and I'll get to that in just a sec. But you're listening to Sports Day. We're powered by Red Energy. They've had the most satisfied customers, unlike Collingwood, for 11 years in a row. That's Red Energy. And of course, Kia, introducing the all-new Kia Carnivale, Australia's first GUV. Now, gentlemen, there will be a new president at the Collingwood Football Club at some stage in the next 6 months. Whether it's announced sooner or later, we're not quite sure. But a number of people have suggested over the last 4 to 6 weeks that Jeff Brown is going to be there, and that's palatable to me. They've also suggested that if you're looking for a celebrity, if you like, or a legendary person to come in to calm the horses, unite the club, it will be John Bertrand.
Yep.
And I was thinking about this coming home from Torquay today, about John Bertrand at 74 years of age and one of the greatest icons of sport in this country becoming a Collingwood president. And I hope he doesn't become a Collingwood president, because when you're a Collingwood or a president of a football club, it's a divisive position in many ways, because it's us against them and we hate you and you hate us. I hope that John Bertrand personally doesn't take that job, because I suspect he'll be asked whether or not he does, because I would hate to have John Bertrand, you know, fall into footy politics like we've seen Eddie do over the last 20-odd years, if you like. He is such an iconic person in sport in this country.
Regal figure.
A very good word, Scoop. Thank you for that. I thought you might have come up with a better one than that, Tom, but you've got a period of 20 seconds to help me out. A regal figure that I hope stays outside of the hurly-burly
of
club football. Yep.
I really like that as a call, Tom. I think that John Bertrand would be really good for Collingwood. I don't think he'll end up being president. I actually don't think Jeff Brown will end up being president, personally. And funnily enough, if Christine Holgate, had not been through what she's been through at Australia Post,
yep,
I actually think she would have ended up succeeding Eddie Maguire. But the thing about being the president of a footy club, particularly Collingwood, you have to get deals done. Is Christine Holgate getting any federal funding in the next 12 months? Probably not.
She may not need it. She just needs state funding. I think that's where Eddie's done his best work in recent times. Let's move on.
She'll get state funding.
She'll definitely get state funding at this stage. There was a very good column today. I like it when you two go head to head.
Big story. It was a big story.
No, we haven't had a big story for a period of time, although Glenn Barber was a big story.
We've been light on
stories. Yeah. Been light. So at this stage, the betting for the best journalist in this town is still very much open, and our man Ash Brown, who's about to join us, is going to, with me, award it at the end of the season, irrespective of the AFL Media Awards. We have our own awards here. But you broke a really interesting story today, Thomas, about Stephen Wells taking a spell. And whilst you painted the picture of a bloke who's just getting to the end of his tether after performing particularly well, it still didn't read that well, a bit like Glenn Bartlett. I mean, Glenn's telling us it was a decision of his own making, etc. But it just sounded a little bit, well, is there any smoke here?
I'm sure there's smoke, Jared.
There's a fire.
What's causing the smoke?
Yeah, well, I can only write what I know 100%. So I'm sure there's more to the Stephen Wells story than what I've been able to write today. But the facts of the matter are that he's standing down from his current role as recruiting manager and also list boss.
He's standing down. He's out of that role.
He's out of the dual role. So there's every chance he might return and be a recruiter or work in the recruiting department. But I've also spoken to people at the Cats today that say they wouldn't be surprised if he just resigned completely. So that's still up
because
in the
because of being asked to divide his responsibilities?
I think he's actually exhausted. I think that bit is true. I think he's actually exhausted because the soft cap cuts, probably combined with the stress of actually doing the job for as long as he has done, has taken its toll on him.
I wouldn't
him.
Think the soft cap cuts would be that big a problem.
No, they do. They are. Well, I've spoken to people at other clubs where...
I haven't spoken to a person in football that doesn't think they're overworked just at the present time. So I accept that. But are they actually overworked?
Well, I don't work at a football club, but based around what people say to me, they say they are overworked. So you can only trust the people that you speak to, Jared. But I think that that Stephen Wells will take a back seat at most and resign at the least. And that
jeez.
Is... And that's huge, given that he's been at the club since 1994. But I'm sure there's more to it. I just can't get it 100% at the moment.
So what would it be? I mean, there's some obvious issues that could have caused this spark or this fire to cause the smoke. I mean, the obvious one is if he's been asked to divide his responsibilities of recruiting and list manager.
I think the obvious one is that. He has made list decisions that he didn't want to make in the past, e.g. giving up 3 first-round picks for Jeremy Cameron and essentially putting all the eggs in the 2021 basket. Mm. And then beyond that, they've almost got to start again, you know, with a new CEO as well. And does he want to go through that again? And I'm not sure that he has the stomach to do that. So that is one theory without it being confirmed.
Tom, great to have you on. We'll see you on AFL tonight, the first crack, which is going gangbusters, and on game days on Fox Footy Channel 504. Chat soon.
Thanks, Sammy. Thanks, Jared.
Tom Morris there, Fox Footy senior AFL reporter. A huge story today on Stephen Wells.
What do you think about the Wells story?
I think that Wells's history at the club would only suggest that for him to do this 5 rounds into the season, something's gone awry.
Mm.
Now, whether that's him disagreeing with what they did in the off-season, whether that's
but if you disagree with that, wouldn't you have taken up the Cudgels, or wouldn't you have walked out
more? Yeah, later in the year. Yeah, I agree. I don't know is the honest answer, Jared, but I can guarantee you one thing. Now that Tom's written the story, it won't take long to find out.
Well, as Scotty Palmer used to say, Scoop,
yep,
where there's smoke, there's blue cod.
Ash Brown's going to give us some smoke for the AFL record next. Welcome back to Sports Day. We're powered by Red Energy. Most satisfied customers 11 years in a row. That is Red Energy. And Kia, introducing the all-new Kia Carnival, Australia's first GUV. We started with Tom Morris from one chief to another. Ash Brown is the chief of the AFL record. You always know he's serious, Jared, when he walks in the studio. Three copies of the record. Yep.
Well,
in hand.
I can see why. Oh. I can see why.
Just
because
looking good today.
When I saw this one, I immediately picked it up and opened the page.
It's got a golden sort of hue to it.
Well, it's the work of a master because it's made me open the page because he's talking about one of the, not, I wouldn't say the great rivals, but it's a hell of a rival and it's a growing rivalry.
Become a great modern rivalry, isn't
it? Between the Pies and the West Coast Eagles. Obviously, the Eagles won the 2018 flag, but that last year's reversal of that victory was the stuff of a truly great rivalry. And that's what features in the AFL record. It's available at good news agents and all AFL grounds. Welcome to you, Ash. This is a really interesting copy, and well done.
Thank you, boy. Good to be with you. Yeah, I like this rivalry because unlike some of the Collingwood rivalries, it's not based on insults or class war or anything. This is a rivalry based on good...
On rivalries.
On good footy. Going back to that Peter Sumich game in 1990 when he had the shot after the siren and missed. And that was when it started.
Yeah, indeed.
And it's been going since then. And you just know, like tomorrow night, as hobbled as Collingwood are, you have to watch this game tomorrow night because they're a chance. They're always a chance over there.
Well, if they are a chance, De Goey has to be De Goey, the non-tease, as Lethal described him, rather than De Goey, the tease. He has to be best on the ground or close enough to.
They'll play him one out and just let him do his stuff.
One out in the goal square. Kick long bombs to De Goey. Long bombs to De Goey. I like it. Let's move on to some issues. And the most notable issue right now is the other growing rivalry that seems to be flourishing, and that is Scoop McClure and Edward McGuire on AFL Classified.
Come on.
That's the second time they've had
TV
a big stinker, isn't it?
Wednesday night.
How have you seen it, and do you think it's healthy?
I think it's healthy for the punters. It's an interesting one. Ed is life after the Collingwood presidency is interesting for Ed, and he's still being – I saw it on Twitter before I came in here, someone saying, why are we still treating him and reporting Eddie like he's the president of Collingwood?
Well, I think it's because he's protecting his patch when he was president of Collingwood.
He is. Yeah, absolutely. And he sees this as a legacy play. I thought you played that well last night, Sam, for what it was worth. I mean, you had one very narrow aspect of the operations of Collingwood under his watch. And I think as Ed does sometimes, gets very defensive and looks at the bigger picture. You weren't talking about the bigger picture. You were looking at...
No, I clearly touched
the minutia.
Clearly touched a nerve, though. And I can understand upon reflection that nerve was Eddie protecting Jared, as you quite aptly put it, his legacy, which was, you know, how dare you say that there was a debacle that happened under my watch.
It may also indicate that Eddie had fingerprints on some of those decisions.
So well, definitely.
I don't know that, but
I would
suspect
agree.
His vehement defence of it suggests that may be the case.
That's exactly what I took from it. I mean, the president doesn't pick the list, Ash, as we all know, but Eddie is a different kind of president.
A different beast of Collingwood. But how important is Eddie going forward? That's the fascinating conversation we're going to have, I think, on this segment ongoingly over the course of the year and even in the future as well. You know, how much does Eddie's opinion matter on stuff ongoing in footy now?
Well, I thought he actually a week ago tried to reimagine, if you like, or reinvent himself as a statesman of the game when he put up a recipe for Tasmania. He was speaking on behalf of the game, which...
Yeah, I thought they were...
I thought it was almost statesman-like, but it was probably a shade more aggressive than statesman-like, but it was certainly, I'm now a big picture football person.
Yeah, I agree with what he said a week ago, but I think a lot of that was based on conversations he's been privy to over the past few years, and he was taking that another step.
So are we to believe then that that's the view of the AFL?
Yeah, I would imagine there's a fair bit of AFL support in that. Don't forget, before the corona came, Tasmania was number one on their agenda.
Oh, you reckon?
It was pretty close. That pivotal meeting, the day that they were told about the coronavirus, Tassie was almost number one on the agenda.
Ash, are you, as a Hawks man, are you disappointed in the club or are you defensive of the club for where they find themselves with the AFLW situation in them not having a team?
Well, I think that they took their eyes off the ball for 6 months to deal with Dingley, and that was the time they were doing all their due diligence around the Dingley purchase.
At the same time that Essendon took their eyes off the ball to deal with the supplement
saga. And then
they
caught out. I mean, I thought Hawthorn didn't deserve a team at the time. I think they probably do now. They'll have to wait till at least 2023.
That's what it feels like, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think they're paying. I mean, there are a couple of teams that got a license from the start who didn't deserve it, but got it because of their supporter base and nothing else. I mean, Carlton didn't do a lot of work.
I would completely agree with that.
Carlton didn't do a lot of work.
Yep, I agree.
St Kilda were robbed from day one. And I think Hawthorn have been a bit unfortunate now because from 6 months after that, they have been very keen to get a team.
Yeah, and look, they missed the boat, Hawthorn and Essendon, for me. But it doesn't sit well with me that two of the strongest clubs financially in the game that could actually do really well with a women's team haven't got one, while there are clubs that are still taking money from the AFL that...
I think the AFL is sort of in a way discriminating now against four teams because four clubs can't go to in a very tough market for sponsors and the like. The four clubs go to that market with one arm tied behind their back now.
I would agree.
Because they don't have a women's team. And that's why I think... My understanding, Gill's very uncomfortable with that. He would like to rectify that as soon as possible.
Ash Brown is with us. He's the AFL Records chief football writer. He's also a senior statesman in the world of football media. And I've got two more.
Senior statesman?
Well, he's a senior journalist, I should put that. Maybe
he's a statesman?
No, he's a senior journalist. We'll elevate him to statesman.
I go to the press box now, I feel very senior. I don't know anyone anymore.
All right, something that I'm quite strong about, and that is the person that's got nyctalopia at the AFL, which is night blindness, specifically Thursday night blindness. I found out who it was. It's Marcus King, who's the general manager of AFL fixturing. And he put up a defence of their decision not to schedule Thursday night football in round 7 and 8 on SEN radio.
I think it's a balance. And clearly we do get a really strong broadcast outcome. And that's, you know, for a lot of the fans, I think they really love Thursdays. But I think there is a balance there. And if you have Thursdays every week, I think it does become an attendance challenge.
So there it is. Essentially, we're talking about an attendance challenge. I mean, ultimately, there are other issues like the agreement with the Players Association. You've got the longer games. But if the AFL wanted to fix this, they could fix this. You get everybody to play 5 day breaks twice during the season. That's not a major impost. And I understand it's difficult for people in the country to get down to a Thursday night game, just as it is to get to a Sunday afternoon game. I mean, it's difficult for people to travel interstate to see their side play when they travel interstate, which happens to clubs outside of Victoria 11 times per season. So there's lots of imposts on lots of people, but the majority of people that watch this game watch it via TV, and the majority of people put out are the majority of people because they want the games played on a Thursday night. It's also commercially one of the dumbest things that the AFL are doing. And one of the reasons I suspect they're not going holeless bowler scoop is because they reckon there's an extra dollar in it next time they sell the rights.
And because they're probably a little bit worried about diluting the product. And that is...
How are you diluting it?
They're going to have to put up...
You're actually increasing the product.
No, I'm just saying if you had Thursday night, let's just say 23 weeks of the year, and then one of those ends up having to be Gold Coast Fremantle.
Scoop's exactly right. In order to make it fair across the competition, they're going to have to schedule some Thursday or Friday night games with some non-competitive teams.
Yeah, that are not St Kilda Richmond every week.
And that's why they're doing it, because they don't want to have to put Gold Coast and North Melbourne and Hawthorn and a couple of the stragglers up there on a regular basis.
Well, I would challenge you, with the exception of North Melbourne, who nearly took took the 4 points off Adelaide last week, and it was a very watchable game. I think that the appetite after last year's footy frenzy for an AFL game on somewhere between 7 and 7.30 is irrespective of who's playing. And I thought last year it was absolutely proven that it doesn't necessarily matter whether they're top or bottom. The competition is now so even that you're going to get a pretty fair result unless you're putting top versus bottom. But if you put two competitive sides, 10th versus 12th, if you put 2nd versus 5th, if you put 8th versus 1st, you are going to get a competitive outing. I mean, you can get a stinker of a game between top and 4th if 4th don't turn up. Like, St Kilda didn't turn up for a few weeks in the first part of the season. So anyway, at least I found out who's suffering from nyctalopia. It's Marcus King, the AFL fixturing boss. Hopefully he gets to see an eye doctor soon and we get his sight sorted out.
Ash, great to have you on. The round five edition of The Record looks a beautiful one.
Thanks, boy. Good to talk to you.
Ash Brown, the chief of the AFL Record.
It's good tonight, Ash.
Jared Healy and Sam McClure with you on Sports Day. Plenty more coming up. We're going to touch base with Aaron Hamill, former St. Great, now an assistant coach. Head of the big clash at Marvel Stadium, but first, a sports update is going to come right after this.
Time for a Sports Day news update for Tyre Power. Selected Kumho tyres. Buy three, get one free.
Welcome back to Sports Day. A sports update for Tyre Power. Store-wide super sale, the biggest brands, best prices. Bailey Fitzgerald is going to miss the Demons round five clash with the Hawks. He fractured his hand at training today. Will now miss between 1 and 2 weeks.
There's been a few fractures in the last couple of weeks, hasn't there?
What would be the most common way, Jared, you fracture your hand? Would it be collision or would it be footy? It wouldn't be footy, would it?
No, it'd be punching someone.
Right.
I mean, punching a wall, punching a football, somebody punching your hand, I suspect, would be one of the most common ways.
Because you can break a finger if you get a nasty footy come quickly at you, but you wouldn't break a hand, would you?
No, you wouldn't break a hand doing that. It'd be somebody punching your hand, although as we saw with, who was it up at the Sydney Swans?
Dane Rampey.
No, it was Heaney.
Heaney, yep.
He just pushed his hand out, I think, and somehow he broke his hand, who knows. But it's unusual, but there's been a spate of them. I thought Nick Riewoldt's comment last night regarding going to court to get an injunction to play in a grand final, I thought it was brutally honest, but absolutely on the money.
100% agree with both
And I dirty on him for not going with it on the couch.
Yep, as you should be.
But it was a hell of a comment. And, I mean, this has been, and we've had Professor Gavin Davis in here, and he's told us why it's gone to 12. You know, there's research here and there's research there. But you could go and argue strongly for an injunction to enable you to play. If you got another doctor, as Nick said, to say no problem. And, yeah. they're easy to find.
And they'd grant the injunction instantly.
They are easy to find.
Yeah. It opens up Pandora's box. There's no doubt about
that. So Nick said he would do it. The question is, will a club do it?
I reckon. Yep. If the player was good enough, it was Patrick Dangerfield.
I think you're spot on. Yeah. Yep. Now it's opened up Riewoldt's box.
Yeah. Forget about Pandora.
Yeah.
And Jared, we both read this today. A senior Japanese ruling party official said cancelling this year's Olympic Games is still an option. Kyoto News Agency reporting on Thursday.
This is 24 hours after we spoke to the chef de mission, who said no problems, it's on.
Yep, which is just, we said at the time, you can't say it. He said, this is Toshihiro Nakai, who's the Secretary General of the Liberal Democratic Party, said in a TV interview, if rising coronavirus cases means it is said to be impossible, we would have to give up. Which is what the point I was trying to make last night.
No, you're spot
if
on,
If three Stu. Cities go into lockdown, yep. like... We can all want the Olympics. Yep. It's just not going to happen. And I don't begrudge anyone, Jared, for trying. They're absolute damnedest.
Yeah.
And they've prepared and they've done beautifully and they've done everything they can.
But
ultimately, we're in the hands of the virus, aren't we?
I think you're right, Scoop. I mean, if the hospitals are full and overflowing and people are dying in, in a unforeseen
set
of circumstances, you've got no choice. That said, I thought that the chef de mission last night made a fair point, and that is there's 1,000 deaths, there's 100 million people in Japan. It's a pin drop of a percentage at the present time, but as somebody over there today, the Secretary General of the Liberal Democratic Party,
Toshihiro Nakai, who may well be, Chesterman we had on last night.
Yeah, he may well have been looking for a little bit of public support, a little bit of PR, but if it does rise to extraordinary levels like it has been in the States, etc., well, it would be in trouble.
Aaron Hamill coming up shortly, but first the time for this.
An odds update for PlayUp. PlayUp is your best bet. Gamble responsibly. Call 1-800-858-858.
Well, we love Thursday night footy and the Saints versus the Tigers. Does it get any bigger for this challenge for the Saints? They've been firmed in, though. They've come in from $2.84, $2.74, now $2.64. The Tigers $1.48. So there's Bunny for the Saints. Also at the line, plus 13.5 at $1.90, the Saints. That's what I like. But the first goal scorer, when you've got Big Maxi King at $9, Riewoldt at $9, Lynchy at $9, it's a fest. It's going to be a goal fest. Who's going to kick the first one? My money, Jack Loney from the Saints at $21. So there we go. Thursday night footy. The Saints, that's where the money's at, but the Tigers are still favourites.
PlayUp is your best bet. Bet now at playup.com.au. Gamble responsibly. Call 1-800-858-858.
Welcome back to Sports Day. We're powered by Red Energy, most satisfied customers 11 years in a row. It's one of the low points of my life in the end of 2000, Jared, when one Aaron Hamill left Carlton.
Yes.
Decided to go to the Saints. Never really forgave him for it. But, you know, it is time to move on from certain things.
Well, given the form that you're in at the present time, Scoop, smashing Eddie Maguire last night, I want you to just sit back, calm, take a couple of deep breaths. Because Aaron Hamill has come on. He's been good enough to give us some of his time, assistant coach down at the Saints. And we want to talk about a really good game of footy that's coming up tonight. So just take it easy on Aaron. If you get it, if you can, Aaron, I apologise in advance in case Scoop goes too hard. But welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, boys. I'm glad you've forgiven me, Sam. After 20 years, mate, it's certainly well and truly time to move on.
It's been a long journey.
How many people still haven't forgiven you, though, Aaron?
Yeah, quite a few, Jared.
Yeah, I know the feeling.
But on for bigger and better things currently. So. That's the main focus now.
Hey, Aaron, without giving away state secrets, just in your discussions during the week, give us some of the keys to stop Richmond, or at least to stop them being the best Richmond that they can be.
Oh, look, I think the last sort of 4 or 5 years, everyone knows they're the benchmark. Everyone's seen a lot of them. They've been prime time for a number of years now, particularly given sort of when they play and how much TV coverage they get. So if you're not watching it, you're certainly there at the game watching it. But look, they are hard to stop. They've got a lot of threats. They've got some significant tools up front, and we know how they like to play. They get you up and burn you back with their forward handball. And basically take you on in the contest. So they don't really change much in terms of what they do, that Lambert role and rolling up, particularly their high half forward. So they're clearly a well-coached team. They're a system-based team, and they're hard to pick apart at times. And particularly last week, you know, against Port, both teams playing, some high quality footy. So, yeah, certainly up against it, but we at certain times we'll need to take the speed out of the game and not make it so. I guess take the chaos out of the game and try and get the game on our terms at times.
I hope that doesn't mean you're going to go slow, because we're over slow footy, Aaron.
No, Jared.
We're going to blame somebody if we go back to putting the handbrake on.
Yeah, well, we're not going to go as quick as Essendon when we got pulled apart a little bit there. So we learn our lessons from that one, and we're able to go a little bit, a little bit more tempo against West Coast. So we got the results from that.
I reckon, just from an outsider's perspective, you've got to make Richmond defend one-on-one. They like to defend as a group. They like putting pressure on through the middle, and they like making your long bomb. And I think the Swans gave us an indicator on A, how to take it inside their forward 50, and that is not to bomb it. Go short, make them defend, and B, push up. Once they start to work, you can't let them get the Chinese check again. You just got to go holeless, bowless, and push up and stop the midfield before they get it inside their forward 50.
Yeah, absolutely. And Sydney did it really well, Jared. You're spot on in terms of watching that game. The amount of corridor ball use they were able to get and generate,
yep.
and didn't allow them time to get their system set and roll back and fold back on you. So. They've got a team full of high quality runners as well. So if you don't move the ball quick, and we need to Max King and Membry, et cetera, there. So if we don't move it, you can die a slow death, certainly. But you just got to be smart with the ball. And you're right, their game is clearly based around their contest and offense spread, too. So where the game's won and lost, we need to get our hands dirty, that's for sure.
We had Seb Ross on the program earlier in the week, Aaron. He's put his hand up for Dustin Martin.
Yeah, he wants Dusty.
He goes for him straight from the first bounce, we assume?
Oh, look, we'll see.
Come on. I mean, the game's on in about 14 minutes.
We're half an hour away from the game and he's not even giving us one.
Yeah, look, you're mad not to, aren't you? I mean, if you he's averaging 10 scoring assists, 20 sort of 6 touches a game, and they're high quality. So the best player in the league, I think if you leave him on his own... you do that at your own peril. So, look, he's going to get the ball, but it's just a matter of the influence and the quality that he does get the footy. So,
Yeah, look. Whoever does get the job, and Seb may get first crack at him, he's certainly going to have his work cut out.
I had a vision today. It was raining down at Torquay, and just coming into my very blurry mind was Jack Higgins kicking five.
Oh, yes. He'd like that.
I can see this vision of Jack and the story of the five snags against his old club dominating the press tomorrow.
I like your crystal ball, Jared. Let's hope.
Aaron, good luck tonight. Thanks for coming on.
Pleasure, boys. Anytime. Thank
Aaron Hamill there, the Saints coach. We'll wrap up the hour on Sports
You should
Day
get
next.
Over that too, by the way. He was great for the Blues. Just move on.
Would have been better if he stayed. Welcome back to Sports Day. We're powered by Ren Energy and Kia. We have to be quick with our tips tonight. Lawrence, 23. Jared, 22. Zoe, 21. Sam, 20. Love how Zoe started tipping last week.
Can you give those scores again,
she's
please?
She's already in front. Lawrence, 23. Jared, 22. Zoe, 21. Sam, 20.
Right.
Tips. St Kilda, Richmond.
Tigers.
We're all tipping Richmond. West Coast, Collingwood.
West Coast, just.
We're all tipping West Coast apart from me. I am tipping the Pies in an upset. Bulldogs, Suns.
Can't square up the Pies now after you called them a debacle.
No. I tipped them in the paper today before last
night. Oh, okay, righto. You tipped them in the paper today before last night. I know what you mean. Bulldogs.
Yeah, that didn't come out right, did it? We're all tipping the Bulldogs. We're all tipping the Bulldogs, yes. Sydney GWS.
Oh, gee, I'm a bit with Richo. This could be an upset, but no, I'm going to stay with the Swans.
Yeah, we're all tipping Sydney, but you're right, Jared. I'm too gutless to tip the Giants as well. Carlton, Port Adelaide.
Port Adelaide.
We're all tipping Port.
Where's that at?
At the G.
Yeah,
I know. Brisbane, Essendon.
Gee.
At the Gabba.
Well, if Brisbane don't beat Essendon at the Gabba, the media caravan is on the Hume Highway.
Straight to Swanee's joint.
Going straight to, where is the Gabba? The Wollongabba.
So we're all tipping Brisbane?
Just.
Apart from Zoe, who's tipping the Bombers, interestingly. Are you a Bombers fan, Zoe? Yeah, I thought so.
Take the scar.
Adelaide, Fremantle. Are we all tipping Adelaide?
I'm tipping Frio.
Okay. We're all tipping Adelaide.
I've got a little suggestion. Jared. I've got a little birdie telling me Tex is not playing.
Hawthorn, Melbourne. I assume we're all tipping Melbourne?
Yep.
Okay, the Demons. And Geelong, North Melbourne. Just for what it's worth, not that I look at gambling all that often, sports bet listing North Melbourne, $11.50 for two horse rates. Yeah. I shouldn't laugh.
No, you shouldn't.
I think tipping Geelong.
I think so.
Okay.
Jeez, it's a one-sided round bar Essendon and Brisbane.
Enjoy the weekend, Jared.
Thank you, Scoop. I hope I get more than four right.
I'm going to steer clear of Eddie for the weekend. Bye, everyone.